We kind of finished Genesis chapter 28. If you want to go there, if you remember the story, we're at the place where Abraham has had Isaac. Isaac, his son, has had a boy, two boys named Jacob, Jacob and Esau. And as with all of the Old Testament, you start with the creation of man, and then it sort of focuses down on one man, Abraham, and his family, and then within his children, it focuses on one of his children, Isaac, and then within Isaac, the focus narrows again away from Esau and onto Jacob, and then Jacob is going to be the father of the nation of Israel, the 12 tribes, and of course, all of it ultimately is leading up to one man, Jesus Christ. So we are kind of zooming in on Jacob. Jacob and Esau, and if you remember last time we covered this, Jacob's a wicked conniver. That's basically what his name means, heel catcher. He was the younger son. He was twins, Jacob and Esau. And even when Esau came out, Jacob came out holding on to his ankle. And from the beginning, he was just reaching for that position. We saw him connive his brother out of his birthright, and then later on deceive his father to steal his brother's blessing. And the interesting thing is, from before he was born, God had already said that the elder son would serve the younger, that he had chosen Jacob. And yet Jacob is doing all of this work to try to gain position and power and whatever. He's just trying to work things in his own favor when God has already promised to do so much for him. And so at this point, he's fleeing Esau. And if you look around verse 10, it says, Jacob went out from Beersheba, and he went towards Haran, and he lighted upon a certain place. He tarried there all night because the sun was set, and he took the stones of that place, and apparently being very poor, he put them for his pillows. I don't know about a rock for a pillow, but I guess if it's all you got. And he lay down in that place to sleep, and he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up upon the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. Behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, and again, I hear this, okay, he has a dream, and there's a staircase, it's really not a ladder, a staircase, angels going up, coming down, and at the top, the Lord is standing. What does he see? Does he see part of the Lord? I mean, God says, no man sees me and lives, so is he seeing feet? Is he seeing God's feet? Somehow he knows God is at the top of this thing. And God says, I am the Lord God of Abraham, thy father, and the God of Isaac. The land wherewith you lie, to thee will I give it to thee and unto thy seed. To thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south, and in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And it's basically God reiterating that promise that he made to Abraham, that he made to Isaac. Now he's going to Jacob, and he's saying, I will bless you, and I'll do these things. Now look at this next verse, and notice who's doing what here. Behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither you go, and will bring thee again into this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken unto thee. God shows up to him and says, I'm going to do some things for you. Now, the interesting thing to me is, what did he just finish doing? He just finished deceiving his father, tricking him by dressing up and pretending to be his brother, and stealing ultimately from his brother. And now he's taking off because he's afraid he's going to die. God shows up to him, and he's got to be thinking, I mean, when I have a dream about God after I've just done a bunch of sneaky stuff, I got to be thinking, yeah, and there's a lightning bolt involved in this dream. And I'm, you know, God shows up and doesn't even mention any of that. He just says, this is what I'm going to do to you. And again, we know this is not for his sake. It's for Abraham's sake. Well, Jacob awakens out of his sleep in verse 16. He said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. And he was afraid, and he said, how dreadful is this place? This is none other but the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Of course, your reaction to the appearance of God depends solely upon your position or your relationship with him at the time that he shows up. If he shows up and you know you're not where you're supposed to be, it's a dreadful thing. If everything's clean between you two, you're welcoming. And I think, you know, for us, if you're in that place where you're thinking, Lord, don't come back today because I got some stuff I got to change, know that I'm praying against you actively, that he'll return today, because I'm tired, and I know he's already taken care of my shortcomings through Christ. Well, Jacob rose up early in the morning. He took the stone that he had put for his pillows, and he set it up for a pillar, and he poured oil on top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel. But the name of that city was called Luz at the first. And Jacob vowed a vow. Now, this is interesting to me. God just shows up and he says, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. Notice what Jacob does. Jacob vows a vow and he says, if God will be with me and will keep me in the way that I go and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone, which I have set for a pillar, shall be God's house. And of all that you shall give to me, will I surely give a tenth unto you. God just showed up, and God's got to be thinking, boys, what a deal. How can I pass that up? You know, the more I give you, the more I get back. Wow, that's a great deal. God shows up to Jacob, and he makes all of these one-sided, undeserved promises. He shows him tremendous grace. What does Jacob turn around and do? He wants to turn it into religion, ultimately. He wants a conditional relationship. If, then. I don't want an if, then in my relationship because I always fail the if side. Here he is actually trying to bargain with God, and he's still in this place. He's not done being a conniver yet. And he's trying to set up this arrangement with God. Well, okay, I'll let you be my God if this and if that and if that. One of the most amazing scriptures, I think, in the Bible is Exodus chapter 3, verse 6, where God is speaking and he says, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. The fact that God would be identified with this loser at all is amazing to me, other than the fact that we're all called Christians and he'd be associated with us too is also pretty amazing. But Jacob wants to put conditions. He's almost like the prodigal son. You remember the prodigal son? He runs away. He does all his thing. He comes to the place of repentance. He runs back to his dad. And what does he try to do? He tries to set up a works relationship with his father. He says, I'm not worthy to be your son. I don't want sonship. I just want to be a servant. You let me go and I'll work and I'll live out in the servant's quarters. And of course, his father will have none of that. His father says, no, I don't think so. You're my son. I'm going to put the robe back on you. I'm going to put the signet on your finger, which is the sign of sonship. Come on in. Let's have a feast. Because God doesn't want that. He's not looking for, if you do this, I will be this to you. Remember, the scripture tells us that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That there was nothing that we did to deserve it. That everything we get is by grace, undeserved favor. Well, that's where we left off last time. So in chapter 29, it says, then Jacob went on his journey. And if you remember why he had gone, he went to find a bride, because his mom and dad had said, don't you take any of these women from this land. You go back to where we came from and you find one of our relatives and you marry one of them. So he was heading back towards Haran. It says, and he came into the land of the people of the east, and he looked, and behold, a well in the field. And lo, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of the well they watered the flocks, and a great stone was upon the well's mouth. A well was pretty valuable in the desert country. And thither were all the flocks gathered, and they rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the sheep and put the stone again upon the well's mouth in his place. And Jacob said unto them, my brethren, whence be ye? And they said, of Haran are we. And he said unto them, know you Laban, the son of Nahor? Because that's, remember, Isaac had married Rebekah. Rebekah's brother was Laban. Nahor was Laban's dad. So he's looking for the family, and they said, do you know them? And they said, we know him. And he said unto them, is he well? And they said, he is well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, comes with the sheep. Why, what a coincidence. It just so happens. There you go. And he said, lo, it's yet high day. Neither is it time that the cattle should be gathered together. Water you the sheep and go and feed them. And they said, well, we can until all the flocks be gathered together, until they roll the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep. Well, we can't do it yet. He says, well, let's start watering the sheep. No, you can't, because there's a stone, a big rock over the top. We got to wait for everyone to get here. And then with all of us, we can roll the stone off. And it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's father, that Jacob went near, and he rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother-in-law. Now, you remember when the servant came to find a wife for Isaac, his dad, Rebekah came out, and she was the one who watered all of the camels. Jacob shows up, he sees Rachel, and we're going to see in about 2 seconds, she is a looker. And he says, well, let me water your sheep, my dear. And then he does a little flexing, and let me roll that stone away. We don't need to wait for them, you know. And so he pushes that away. Where'd you come from? Oh, over there. I mean, you know, he's, and he kissed Rachel. He just goes for it right here in verse 11. I'm sure it was just a friendly greeting, right? He kissed Rachel and he lifted up his voice and he wept because he wanted to show her he had feelings. He wasn't just strong, but he wasn't. No, he's happy because, you know, you go, you travel all this distance. He doesn't know anybody. He's never met them before. And he's praying, God, show me where I'm supposed to go. He shows up and it just so happens out trots this nice looking girl from the right family. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother and that he was Rebekah's son. She ran and told her father. And it came to pass when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him. And he embraced him and he kissed him. And he brought to him his house, and he told Laban all these things. And Laban said unto him, and this is one of the truest things in this whole story, surely you are bone of my bone and my flesh. You are my bone and flesh. And he abode with him the space of a month. Laban saw him and said, dude, you are my relative. And if you remember back when Jacob's mom first ran into Isaac, Jacob's dad, she went back, and of course, he gave her like a gold bracelet and a gold nose ring and some other stuff. And it says when she went back, Laban was checking out all the gold. And he gets real friendly once he sees that Isaac is loaded. Well, Laban comes back, and he's still thinking about that gold. And now somebody from that family comes back, yee-haw. So he's welcoming him in. And we're going to see that these guys are two peas in a pod. Jacob gets everything he deserves and more from Laban. And Laban, conversely, gets, I mean, they are both just trying to take each other through the whole thing. Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. Tender, you know, when you hurt yourself, you say that spot is really tender. Apparently, Leah hurt your eyes. No, it really doesn't mean that. It means it. It could mean weak-eyed, it could mean soft-eyed, it could mean that she had green eyes versus, which wasn't really prized in that culture. But the bottom line is, Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful. So if Rachel is beautiful, and it's done in contrast to Leah, Leah was not. She was not considered as beautiful. And Jacob loved Rachel, the younger one. And he says, I'll serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. Whoop, you know what? I skipped a verse, didn't I? Verse 15, Laban said to Jacob, because you are my brother, should you be here and serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall thy wages be? Now, I don't know about you. When I go traveling and I run into maybe some of my family, after I've stayed there for a day or two, they don't usually say, so I don't want you to stay here and work for me for nothing. I'll pay you something. Tell me your wages. Like Jacob, Laban's basically saying, if you're going to stay here, dude, you're going to work to earn your keep. I mean, he says it in such a way that it's like, you know, oh, but he's really saying, you're going to stay here, you're going to work. And then tells us that they're the two daughters. And so the answer to that question in verse 18, Jacob loves Rachel and he says, I'll serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. Now, in case you forget, Jacob is about 70 years old right now. I don't know how old Rachel is. She's still beautiful. But he's willing to work 7 years for her. Because he left, even though he had been the one who got the blessing and inheritance and all of that, he kind of left in a hurry. So he really doesn't have anything. He can't afford to pay a dowry. So he says, I'll work 7 years, which is pretty extensive. And Laban said, it's better that I give her to thee than I should give her to another man. Abide with me. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. And they seemed to him but a few days for the love that he had to her. Now, it does show an interesting lesson here, an important one. He saw her. He was very attracted to her. Says he loves her. And notice this. He was willing to wait 7 years. This is not an infatuation or a lust, because the contrast is love is willing to wait. Lust wants to be fulfilled right now. Love is willing to serve. Lust wants to be served. And he's willing to say, work, sure. And for him, because he loved her, 7 years was nothing. It flew by. But he was working his calendar, because on the 21st verse, it says, Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled. My days. It's been 7 years, but I've been counting the days. Today's the day. Been 7 years. I want to go in unto her. Let's consummate this relationship. And Laban gathered together all of the men of the place, and he made a feast. And I'm sure, like all good wedding feasts, it was flowing with wine, because that was probably part of Laban's plan here. And it came to pass in the evening, when it was nice and dark, and I'm sure that Jacob was slightly lubricated. He took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to him, and he went unto her. Now, in that culture, you'd be veiled. You know, the dress would be a, you know, heavy veil and everything. So I think, you know, I think there's a good case that Jacob probably was slightly dulled in his senses. It was dark. They went through the ritual. I don't think there was a whole lot of reciting the vows, pulling back the veil, any of that. So he's able. What he does is he brings Leah in. He's supposed to be marrying Rachel. But Laban does the old switcheroo. And Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpah, his maid, for a handmaid. And it came to pass in the morning, he rolls over, and this is not what I remember. This is not what I, you know, it's one of those, what exactly happened last night? What was that in that, you know? And it's Leah. It's not the beautiful one. It's the one that hurts your eyes. And, you know, you go through this and you laugh. If nothing else, these chapters that we're going to go through tonight, and we're going to cover a little distance because there's more story and less explanation, but if you feel bad about coming from a dysfunctional family, you should know that there is no messed up family that God can't use, because this family is dysfunctional with a capital D. Imagine being Leah, right? What do you want more than anything? You want some guy to be your knight in shining armor, to love you, to want only you, and your dad comes to you and says, look, there's only one way we're getting rid of you, and it's in the dark after a lot of booze. So this is what we're going to do. You shut your mouth, you say nothing. This, and then the other daughter, you be quiet, you get in the back room, you're not going to say anything. So Rachel, who had some guy that loved her and was willing to work 7 years for her, sees her put aside so that the sister can have her. The sister's magic honeymoon night is spent with some guy saying Rachel's name instead of hers. Nice dad you got there. Nice family. He wakes up in the morning and says to me, what did you do? I served you for Rachel. Why have you beguiled me? And Laban says, You didn't know about that? Oh, well, see, we have this custom in our family, in our country, as he says, it must not be done so in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. He says, you know, we have a rule. We have laws in our country about the firstborn. You're familiar with the firstborn, aren't you, Jacob? Because didn't you do something with it? You're not the firstborn, are you? How did you get the blessing? Oh, someone deceived you, faked out your dad about who you were? Well, how do you like them apples? That's basically what he's saying. And what Jacob is getting is he's getting a little lesson in Galatians 6:8, be not deceived, God's not mocked, whatever a man sows, that also shall he reap. He's learning his lessons through the school of hard knocks, and it's a very costly lesson. Now, you know, again, with all of that, understand as believers, God measures that into our life, that it's not like necessarily everything that we've ever sown we're going to eat 100%. But yet, there are consequences to actions, and Jacob's receiving some of that. So Laban says, no, I can't do it that way. The older's got to go first. But if you fulfill her week, if you'll work another 7 years, we will give thee this also for thy service, which you shall serve with me yet another 7 years. So Jacob did so, and he fulfilled her week, and he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also. And Laban gave to Rachel his daughter Bilhah, his handmaid, to be her maid. And he went in also unto Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah, and served with him yet 7 other years. Do you think that's really a happy home where one guy marries sisters? Sisters that don't like each other. Sisters that, you know, there's contention we're going to see. And he says he loved Rachel more than Leah. It's a little more than that, because the next verse it says, when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. You know, Matthew chapter 6, Jesus says, no man can serve two masters. He'll hate the one and love the other, or he'll hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve Rachel and Leah both. You can't. I mean, that's, and truthfully, it was designed from the beginning to be one man, one woman together for life. Any of the progressive relationship ideals or ideas that people try, and you watch the whatever that reality show is about the Mormon plural marriages. I don't care what they show on TV. There's pain involved in that, and we see it here with this family. He opened her womb, and you know that's one thing you see a lot in the scriptures, that God opens and closes the womb. And in this case, Rachel doesn't have any kids, but Leah, because she's hated, because he loves her sister more, he allows her to have a child. Interesting. He loves the one, hates the other, but apparently doesn't have any problem spending time with her in the marital way, even though he doesn't like her. Leah conceived, bare a son, and the reason why they're giving us this detail is so we understand where these 12 tribes come from. And she called his name Reuben, for she said, "Surely the Lord has looked upon my affliction. Now therefore my husband will love me." Is that sad? Reuben means, see, a man. And it's almost like she's naming this child, "Look, a boy, honey, you know, I gave you a son, you should love me now." Didn't work. She conceived again, and she bare a son and said, "Because the Lord has heard that I was hated," so apparently she's still hated even though she had a kid, "He hath therefore given me this son also," and she called his name Simeon, which means hearing, because the Lord heard me. And she conceived again and bare a son and said, "Now this time will my husband be joined unto me, because I have borne him three sons, therefore his name shall be called Levi," which means attachment, hoping that this would be the catalyst that would cause her husband to finally love her. And she conceived again, and she bare a son, and she said, "Now will I praise the Lord." Therefore she called his name Judah and left bearing. Finally names her son Judah, which means praise. Almost like after the fourth time, she says, you know, maybe my satisfaction needs to be in the Lord, so I'm just going to praise him. It says in Isaiah 54:5, "For thy maker is thine husband, and the Lord of hosts is his name." And I think in some places it tells us that the Lord is father to the fatherless, and he's husband to the widows. And there are some women who should realize their consolation is in the Lord, especially if they're stuck with a Jacob. Interesting to me, through this situation, we've just seen that the Levites, who are going to become the priests that serve continually upon the Lord, they come through the hated wife. The Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Messiah, comes through the hated wife. Now you come to chapter 30, and it says, When Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister, and she said unto Jacob, "Give me children or I die." Kind of funny, actually, because it's in childbirth that she will die. And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, godly guy that he was. And he said, "Am I in God's stead? Who has withheld thee the fruit of the womb?" Basically, he says to her, "What are you talking to me for? You ought to talk to God." Now, contrast Jacob with his father. In Genesis chapter 25, we read when Rebekah was barren, it says Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. When Rachel goes to Jacob and says, "I can't have any kids," he says, "Shouldn't you pray about that woman? Why are you talking to me?" Godly, spiritual man that he is. And she said, "Behold, my maid Bilhah, go in unto her, and she shall bear upon my knees, that I may have children by her." Part of that custom in Abraham, remember Abraham did this with Sarah's handmaid, Hagar. She would have a child in place of him, that he would go and sleep with the handmaid, but the child would be adopted. It would be as if it was his wife's. That whole phrase, "shall bear upon my knees," they actually would do both conception and deliverance, the delivery of the child, on the wife's lap. I mean, it was some weird, bizarre thing, but it would show everybody, hey, this was done, you know, as a surrogate. She's not being a wife. I mean, when it says he went in unto her, Jacob went in unto her as a wife, it doesn't mean that he actually married her. It meant that he went into her and acted like husband and wife. But this child, for all intents and purposes, is going to be treated as if it was Rachel's. Bilhah conceived, bare Jacob a son, and said, And Rachel said, God hath judged me and hath also heard my voice, and he's given me a son. Therefore she called his name Dan, which means judgment, as in vindication. God saying, he cares about me after all. In Bilhah, Rachel's maid conceived again and bare Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, with great wrestling have I wrestled with my sister, and I have prevailed. Apparently she feels like, yeah, now things are going my way. I'm winning this fight. I'm having another one through my handmaid. Here's number two. I'll be catching up. And so she names that one Naphtali, which means wrestle. And when Leah saw that she had left bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob to wife. And of course, there's no sign of Jacob objecting to any of this. He seems quite content to let this fight go on. So sure, another one, and Zilpha, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a son, and Leah said, a troop cometh, and she called his name Gad, which means a troop. I don't know if she's saying, aha, reinforcements, or I'm going to have an army of kids through this one, whatever. She names him Gad. And Zilpha, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a second son, and Leah said, happy am I, for the daughters will call me blessed, and she called his name Asher, which means blessed. And Reuben went in the days of the wheat harvest, and he found mandrakes in the field, and he brought them unto his mother Leah. And then Rachel said to Leah, give me, I pray thee, thy son's mandrakes. Now, this particular plant, the Jews call it the love apple, and they believed it, the roots of it had some effects on infertility. Don't know that it does, but that's what they thought. And Leah's son goes out and finds some of this rare plant, brings it in. Rachel still hasn't had any kids. She's just had them through her handmaid. So she says, hey, I want those because maybe that'll do the trick. And Leah responds in verse 15 and says unto her, is it a small matter that you have taken my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel said, therefore, he shall lie with thee tonight for your son's mandrakes. All right, I'll make you a deal. I'll let him come spend the night with you if you give me those mandrakes. And Jacob came out of the field in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come in unto me, for surely I have hired thee with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night, and God hearkened unto Leah, and she conceived, and she bare Jacob a fifth son. And Leah said, God has given me my hire, because I have given my handmaid to my husband, and she called his name Issachar, means reward. And Leah conceived again, and she bare Jacob the sixth son. And Leah said, God has endued me with a good dowry. Now will my husband dwell with me, because I have borne him six sons. And she called his name Zebulun, which means dwelling. How sad is it that this woman has had six kids in the hopes of winning her husband over, and afterwards she bare a daughter and called her name Dinah. And God remembered Rachel, and God hearkened to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bare a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. And she called his name Joseph, which means may he add, and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. And it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said to Laban, send me away from my wife and from my kids, please. No, he doesn't say that. He says, send me away that I may go into my own place, into my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served thee, and let me go, for you know my service which I have done to thee. And Laban said unto him, I pray thee, if I have found favor in your eyes, tarry, for I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for thy sake. Now, that word experience can mean one of two different things. It can mean by experience, like I've seen this happen since you've been here, or it can mean by divination. We're going to see in a minute that Laban is not a believer, and he follows false gods, and maybe he's saying by divination. That word is translated either way. But he says, it's obvious to me that since you've been here, I have been blessed because of your presence. And he said, appoint me thy wages, and I will give it. In other words, you tell me what you want for money or for payment, and stay, and I'll let you stay. And so the response is, he said unto him, you know how I've served you and how your cattle was with me. For it was little which you had before I came, and now it's increased unto a multitude. And the Lord has blessed thee since my coming. And now, when shall I provide for my own house also? I mean, everything I've done, he said, I've done all this work, and yeah, I got these wife and kids, but everything that's come out of these flocks is all yours. I've got nothing from this. And he said, well, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep your flock. I'll pass through all your flock today, removing from there all the speckled and spotted cattle, and all the brown cattle among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and of such shall be my hire. So then, so shall my righteous answer for me in time to come, when it shall come for my hire before thy face, everyone that's not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the sheep, that shall be counted stolen with me. And Laban said, behold, I would it might be according to your word. He said, this is what I want. Because in that culture, you had the animals, and the recessive trait would be to have spotted ones, brown ones. They were less desirable. They liked the white ones, the solid color. So Jacob said, this is all I want. I'll just go through, and I'll take all of those ones, the ones that aren't that desirable. Those sheep I'll keep for myself. You can have all of the other ones. And then if you ever happen to see any that are solid color, that they're with me, you'll know I stole them. I'll only take the other ones. And Laban says, hey, that's a good deal. In the way I read this is Laban, being a cheat, goes to cheat. Because he's got a mixed herd. He's got some that are brown and some that are speckled and all of that. And Jacob's basically said, well, I'll just take all the ones that come out that way. And Laban says, that's a good idea. So then he, Laban, removes that day the goats that were ring-straked and spotted and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted and everyone that had some white in it and all the brown among the sheep. And he gave them into the hands of his sons. And he set 3 days' journey betwixt himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. So he says, sure, we'll do that, but I'm just going to take out all of those spotted ones, okay? And so then you can have the offspring of all the white ones. You can have any of the spotted ones that come out of that. I think that's what Laban is doing here. But Jacob, not to be outdone, he decides he's got a plan. And it says, Jacob took him rods of green poplar and hazel and chestnut tree, and he pilled, which means he pilled back some of the bark, white streaks in them, and he made the white appear which was in the rods. And he set the rods which he had pilled before the flocks in the gutters of the watering troughs, when the flocks came to drink, that they should conceive when they came to drink. See, he thought, well, this is what I'll do. I'll put some checked and some spotted stuff in front of them. And so when they conceive, they'll be in the presence of those colors, and then they'll have children that are those colors. That was Jacob's big plan. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I remember enough about biology class when I was in seventh grade and again when I was a sophomore to know that it just doesn't quite work that way. This is Jacob trying to manipulate the situation for his own benefit. We're going to see in a minute, although it works, it's not because of anything he does, it's because of what God does. Because it says, the flocks conceived in verse 39 before the rods and brought forth cattle, ring-strake, speckled and spotted. And Jacob did separate the lambs and set the faces of the flocks towards the ring straight. And all the brown and the flocks of Laban, he put his own flocks by themselves, and he put them not in Laban's cattle. And it came to pass whenever the stronger, because this is Jacob again, the stronger cattle did conceive, that Jacob laid the rods before his eyes of the cattle in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the cattle were feeble, he put them not in. So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger Jacob's, because he figured, well, I don't want the unhealthy ones. So when the healthy ones come, I'll put my little, you know, my little tools out there, and that'll make them have spotted ones that I get to keep. But then when all the sick ones come, I'll take them away so that they end up being the white ones that Laban gets stuck with. Well, God actually works through this. It says, the man increased exceedingly and had much cattle and maidservants and men servants and camels and donkeys. Now, I know we're covering a lot of ground, but we're going to fly through this because it's all one story. He heard the words of Laban's son saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and of that which is our father hath gotten all his glory. See, Laban's got sons, and he's watching this, and he's seeing Jacob's herd is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and Laban's is dwindling and dwindling. And his sons are saying, wait a minute, this dude's ripping off our inheritance. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. And the Lord said to Jacob, return unto the land of your fathers and your kindred, and I'll be with you. You know, basically, everything gets sour. And sometimes the Lord uses that. He's going to use the fact that this relationship is going to turn to get Jacob to go where it is he's supposed to go. Jacob sent, and he called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock, and he said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it's not towards me as before. Your dad hates me, but the God of my father has been with me, and you know that with all my power I have served your father. And check this out. Your father has deceived me, and he changed my wages 10 times. Which means the cattle would start to have offspring, and a bunch of speckled ones would come out. And Laban would say, I got an idea, let's change it. From now on, all the speckled ones will be mine. Jacob would say, okay. And then all of a sudden, there wouldn't be any more speckled ones, and they'd start coming out ring straight. And then Laban would show up and say, I changed my mind. Let's make it so that now all of the ring straight ones are mine. And then they'd come out all brown. I mean, and so God, every time Laban, because it says right here, God suffered him not to hurt me. 10 times. You imagine working for a boss, and your boss, you think your boss is lousy? What if your boss 10 times told you he was going to pay you something and then changed it? What did Jacob do? Well, obviously, he filed something with the labor board. No, he doesn't. He said God wouldn't let him hurt me. Because I think the ultimate best result for all of us when we're wronged is to let God repay. Because, I mean, you can defend yourself, and sometimes you'll do okay defending yourself, but my experience has always been he does a much better job of defending me than I could ever do of my own. Because look, verse 8 says, if he says thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then the cattle bear speckled. And if he said thus, the ring straight shall be your hire, then bear all the cattle ring straight. Thus God, and this is not my schemes, this is not my little trick with the different colored sticks, God has taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. And it came to pass at the time that the cattle conceived, I lifted up my eyes and I saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leapt upon the cattle were ring-straked and speckled and grizzled. And the angel of God spake unto me in a dream, and saying, Jacob, and I said, here I am. And he said, lift up now your eyes and see, all the rams which leapt upon the cattle are ring-straked, speckled, and grizzled, for I have seen all that Laban did unto you. I am the God of Bethel. Remember where you made those vows and you set up that altar? He said, I'm the God of that place where you anointed the pillar and where you vowed a vow unto me. Now arise, get out of this place and return to the land of your kindred. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, well, is there yet a portion of inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him as strangers? For he has sold us and he's quite devoured also our money. The girls are saying, hey, I'm ready to go because dad doesn't care about us. He just used us to get a lot of work out of you. He doesn't care about us. We have no inheritance. For all the riches which God has taken from our father, that is ours and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God has said unto you, do. Now, if you ever wonder if God is in you doing something, if you as a man pray and God tells you to do something and it involves your wife packing up 6 kids and traveling 1,100 miles on a camel, and they say to you, sure, no problem, we'd be glad to do it, whatever you say, the Lord's in it. I'm just saying right up front. If your wife will be willing to do that. But truthfully, any wife worth her salt wants her husband to follow the word of the Lord. And I'm sure his wives were glad that he was actually having some communication with God. You know the way he tells this, he had mentioned it, and it was news to them. You mean you're starting to get a relationship with God? Hallelujah, we'll go wherever you want to go. Well, Jacob rose up, set his sons and his wives upon his camels. He carried away all his cattle, all his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting which he had gotten in Paddan Aram, for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. But he waits, notice this. Laban went to shear the sheep, because he waits till dad's out of town shearing the sheep, and that's when he takes off. And Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's, the family idols. He was a pagan worshiper, you know, idol worshiper, and they had these family gods. They would be your little carvings that represented your gods. Each family had their own. It's a big deal. You know, you had your own little home altar. Rachel, spiritual woman that she is, grabs daddy's gods before they leave. Jacob didn't know. It says, Jacob stole away unaware to Laban the Syrian, in that he told him not that he fled. So he fled with all that he had. He rose up, passed over the river, set his face toward the Mount of Gilead. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled. He's got a 3-day head start. And he took his brethren with him. He pursued after him 7 days' journey, overtook him on Mount Gilead. And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night, and he said to him, take heed that you speak not to Jacob, either good or bad. Laban's there, and you know he's smoking, and he's been running full stop to catch him, and he just gets there, and he has a dream at night, and God says, be careful. Be careful. Then Laban overtook Jacob. Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount. Laban and his brethren pitched in the Mount of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, what have you done that you've stolen away unawares to me and carried away my daughters as captives, taken with the sword? You stole them away. Wherefore did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and didn't tell me, that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with songs and with a tabret and the harp? Yeah, right. I wanted to throw you a party, you know? How dare you deceive me? That's so unfair. I've been nothing but kind to you and dealt honestly with you. I mean, you hear these two guys talking to each other. And it's like when, it's when two cheats talk to each other and they both know that the other one is lying through their teeth, and yet they're playing that game of appearances like they're being righteous. You haven't suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters. You have done foolishly in so doing. And then he says this, it's in the power of my hand to do you hurt. I can mess you up. But the God of your father spoke to me yesternight, saying, take thou heed that you speak not to Jacob either good or bad. Well, then actually, Laban, no, it's not in your power. If God says to you, don't mess with my boy, it's really not in your power to do him hurt. But Laban wants to play the part of being the, you know, the better man. And now, though you would needs be gone, because you sore longed after your father's house, yet wherefore have you stolen my gods? Now, as a side note, it's always worth mentioning, if someone can steal your god, you've chosen the wrong god. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, well, because I was afraid, for I said, peradventure, you'd take by force your daughters from me, and whomsoever you find your gods, let him not live. Before our brethren, discern thou which is yours with me, and take it to thee. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen him. He said, look, I was afraid you'd kill me and keep your daughters, but I didn't steal anything of yours, so you go look for your gods, and if anybody here has them, you can kill them. Because he didn't know his wife had stolen them. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the two maidservants' tent, but he found them not. Then went he out of Leah's tent, and he entered into Rachel's tent. And she's a chip off the old block. Now, Rachel had taken the images and put them in the camel's furniture. She stuck them under the seat of her camel. And she sat upon them. Now, again, if someone can sit upon your god, you've probably chosen the wrong god. And Laban searched all the tent, but he found them not. And she said to her father, oh, let it not displease my lord. I cannot rise up before you, for the custom of women is upon me. Dad, I'm sorry, it's that time of the month, and I really can't stand up right now. So forgive me for not getting up and letting you look under me, but you really don't want to anyways. Exactly. I mean, look at this family. Now, let's just say this, okay? If the Bible was made up, if you were going to make up a story to show what a wonderful people group you were, would you write this kind of stuff about your ancestors? I mean, this is a messed up family. Nobody would make this up. And he searched and he found not the images. And Jacob was wroth. That's King James for ticked. And he chode with Laban. And Jacob answered and he said to Laban, so what's my trespass? What's my sin that you've so hotly pursued after me? Whereas you've searched all my stuff, what have you found of your household stuff? Set it here before my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge betwixt us. Okay, show me. Where's the evidence that I've stolen from you? This 20 years have I been with you. Your ewes and your she-goats have not cast their young. The rams of thy flock have I not eaten. Look, when I was with you, your animals didn't miscarry, and I didn't eat your animals. That which was torn of beasts, I brought not unto thee. When the animals attacked and took something, I ate that loss. I bear the loss of it, he said. And of my hand did you require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. I took all the responsibility. I didn't take anything from you. I was above board. Thus I was, in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. Thus I have been 20 years in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, and 6 years for your cattle. And you've changed my wages 10 times. Now, when you do the math, it means I got all your cattle for 6 years, and each of your daughters only cast me 7 years. So apparently the daughters are worth a little more than the cattle, but he said, except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely you had sent me away now empty. If it hadn't been for God, you'd have ripped me off. God has seen mine affliction, the labor of my hands, and he rebuked you last night. And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children. These cattle are my cattle, and all that you see is mine. And what can I do this day unto these my daughters, or unto the children which they have borne? Now therefore, come thou, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between you and me. Like any agreement these two sign is going to be worth anything. I mean, really, is this going to mean anything? No. Jacob took a stone, set it for a pillar. Jacob said to his brethren, gather stones, and they took stones, and they made a heap, and they ate there upon the heap. And Laban called it a lot of letters strung together. Jegar Sahadutha. Jacob couldn't pronounce it, so he called it Galeed, which means heap of witness. And Laban said, This heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Galeed, in Mizpah. For he said, the Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. Now this cracks me up. Because when I was in high school, I had a girlfriend. And we were lifelong, was she and I forever, no doubt. Not so much. And there was one point where we were going to be apart, and so she bought me this little gift. You've probably seen it. It's called Mizpah, and it's this two-piece necklace that's a heart. And it's got this verse on it, but they come in two pieces. The Lord watch between me and thee while we're apart one from another. And we'd each wear one, and it would, show our love was going to be eternal. The funny thing is, this agreement is basically, they set a mound, and they say, the Lord keep an eye on you, and you stay on your side, and I'm going to stay on my side, and neither one of us are going to mess with the other one. And yet we take this thing and make it like it's some romantic thing, when it's really two thieves just agreeing to stay apart and not mess with each other. He says, if you afflict my daughters, you take another wife beside my daughters. No man's with us. See, God is witness between me and you. And Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap, behold this pillar which I have cast betwixt me and thee. The heap be a witness, and this pillar be a witness, that I will not pass over this heap to thee, and that you shall not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me. The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge betwixt us. And Jacob sware by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered sacrifice on the mount, called his brethren to eat bread. They did eat bread, tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning Laban rose up, kissed his sons and daughters, blessed them, and Laban departed and returned to this place. Now obviously, and we'll end here, obviously this guy Jacob is not, he's not the ideal as far as a spiritual man goes, but he's growing, and he's going to eventually be renamed. His name is going to become Israel, which means governed by God, because God's going to get a hold of him. He's going to have another wrestling match, and he's going to tap out when God takes his hip out of socket. But I guess, if nothing else, be encouraged. If your husband's a jerk or your family life is messed up, could be worse. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much, Father, that you can take our mistakes and our foolishness and wicked parents and selfish people. And Lord, your will is not frustrated. And Lord, that we can be in situations where we're being dealt with unfairly. And Lord, if we trust you, you will defend us and you won't let any harm come to us, no matter how bad we have been mistreated. Lord, help us to trust in you from the beginning and not be like these people. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Grace and peace, guys.